So, welcome again to, this is the last session of our class on meditation. So I thought we would start with another practice of the meditation that we've been doing. Then I'll do a kind of review of some of the main points that we've covered, and then some sort of final advice on practicing meditation. So, you've heard of hoarding, hoarders, you know, people who can't throw things away. They kind of, their apartment or house gets filled up with lots and lots of things, old newspapers and old records and CDs and so on. Maybe you know somebody like that, maybe in your family or friend or neighbor. There was a TV program in America for a while. I don't know if they still have it, but it was called Hoarders. And so they would go into the house of one of these people and then, you know, kind of try to help them to, you know, give away some of these things that they've been accumulating and don't really need anymore. So it's kind of an interesting phenomena. But maybe in some ways we're all hoarders. You know, maybe we hold on to a lot more things than we really need. And also with regard to our mind, yeah, we might hoard old information, memories, experiences that, you know, aren't so useful anymore, but we sort of cling to them. We just can't give them up. And of course, it's useful to remember past experiences. We can learn from the past. And of course, you know, we can't, if we didn't have memories, it would be very difficult to function in the world. So just to function and live a life, a normal life, we do need to remember things. But perhaps sometimes we think too much about the past. We keep replaying old experiences, old memories again and again and again, more than we really need to. Especially when it comes to meditation. So when we practice meditation, ideally we should keep our mind focused on our object of meditation, whether it's the breath or the Buddha or loving kindness, whatever it is that we are meditating on, the object of our meditation. We should really try our best to stay focused on that object. But often our mind gets drawn away from it, distracted from it. And one of the main reasons for this is these old memories keep coming back, calling for our attention. And so this becomes a big distraction in meditation, making it difficult to meditate, and then difficult to make progress in the practice of meditation. So it's very important that we learn, this is part of the practice of meditation, is to learn to let go of thoughts, such as thoughts of the past. Another kind of thought that often comes up is the future. Plans for what we're going to do later in this day, or the next day, and so on and so on. So we tend to think a lot about the future. And again, we do sometimes need to think about the future to, you know, plan our life and our activities, our work, and so forth. But we don't need to be thinking about it all the time, you know, same thoughts again and again and again, especially when we're meditating. Okay, meditation is not the time to be making our plans for the future. Okay, so we need to learn, if we really want to practice meditation well and do well and get the benefits of meditation, we need to learn how to let go of these thoughts that keep playing themselves over and over and over again in our mind. Thoughts of the past, thoughts of the future, thoughts of our work, our worries, our problems, and so on and so forth. So, you know, if there are things we need to think about or make plans for, do that at another time, not when you're meditating. Okay, so we need to learn some discipline to be able to keep coming back to our object of meditation and let go of or put aside all those other thoughts. Okay, so let's try to keep that in mind while we do our practice tonight. Okay, so we'll start as usual with sitting comfortably, getting into a good position for meditation, and remembering why we're doing meditation, trying to generate a positive intention or motivation. We'll do a kind of body scan, going through the body to let go of tension. And then we'll spend some time focusing on the breath, which is the kind of meditation we've been doing from the beginning. Okay, so get into a good position for meditation. Good position means to have your legs crossed in whatever way is most comfortable for you. Or if you're sitting on a chair, have your feet flat on the floor. And whether you're sitting on the floor or on a chair, try to keep your back straight. Try to sit up straight. But at the same time, let your shoulders be relaxed, not tense or tight. You can leave your eyes open a little bit to let some light in, to help you stay awake, avoid falling asleep in meditation. And just have your eyes looking down onto your lap or the floor in front of you. You can have your hands in your lap with the right on top of the left, palms facing upwards, two thumbs touching. But don't press your arms against your sides. Leave some space for the air to circulate. And let's take a few minutes to see if we can bring into our mind, if it's not already there, altruistic intention as to why we're here, why we're doing meditation. So if you're comfortable with the idea of bodhicitta, if you've heard of that and thought about it, meditated on it, and are comfortable with it, you can bring that into your mind, which means wanting to reach enlightenment for the benefit of all living beings. But if you're not so familiar with or comfortable with that idea, another altruistic motivation would be wanting to benefit others as much as possible, meaning wanting not only our own happiness and well-being and freedom from suffering, but wanting to bring this to others as well, as many other people and beings as possible. So you could think something like, I'm here to learn ways in which I can work on myself and develop myself so that I can be more helpful to others as much as I can. And even when I can't help them, at least to avoid harming them or causing problems for them. So that's just a suggestion, but you can use your own words, your own ideas to generate some kind of altruistic motivation as your reason for being here. So when we meditate, it's good to try to be as relaxed physically as possible. So we'll just kind of quickly go through the body to see if there's tension anywhere so that we can try to relax that tension. So first feel the top of your head, relax any tension that might be there. Then feel your forehead and let your forehead relax. Then feel your eyes, let all the muscles around your eyes and behind your eyes relax. And then relax the rest of your face, all the muscles in your face that we use when we make facial expressions like smiling. So let all those muscles relax. But it's nice to continue having a little bit of a smile on your mouth, on your lips, if you can. That can actually help your mind to be more relaxed, positive, and happy. And then relax the right side of your head. Then relax the back of your head. Then the left side of your head. And try to relax the inside of your head as well. If there's any tightness or tension inside your head, see if you can let that go. So that your whole head, both outside and inside, is as relaxed and free of tension as possible. But don't worry if you're not able to let go of all tension, if there's little spots of tension here or there that won't go away. Try not to worry about that or be upset about that. Just let them be. Feel that you're doing the best you can to let go of tension, but be content with whatever you're able to manage. Then let your awareness move down into your neck and throat. Relax that area. And then the upper part of your back, shoulder muscles, shoulder blades. Sometimes there's a lot of tension there, especially if you're working at a desk, at a computer, and so on. So see if you can let go of the tension in that area. And let your awareness continue moving down your back. Relax the middle part of your back. The lower part of your back. Try to have the whole of your back relaxed and as free of tension as possible. And then move your awareness to the front part of your body, starting with your chest. Relax the outside as well as the inside of your chest, including your lungs, your heart. And then let the awareness continue moving down through your torso. Relax the area around the diaphragm and the abdomen, including all the muscles and the organs in that area. then the pelvic area and the hips. Let that area relax, including all the internal organs there. And then relax your right leg, starting with the upper part of your right leg. Then the lower part of the right leg. And then your right foot, all the way down to the toes. And then the left leg, first the upper part of the left leg. And the lower part, then the left foot and toes, and then your right arm, starting at the top, the upper part of the right arm. And then the lower part. And the hand and fingers. And then the left arm, starting with the upper part. Then the lower part. And then the hand and fingers. So do the best you can to keep your body in a relaxed state for the rest of the time that we're meditating. If you notice tension popping up in any part of the body, you can just briefly put your attention there at that place and see if you can let it go. But mainly for the rest of the session, we'll be focusing on the breathing. So allow the breath to flow in and out in a natural way without controlling your breathing. Letting go of control and just allowing the body to breathe on its own. Sometimes the breath might be longer or deeper, sometimes shorter, shallower. And that's okay, that's normal. The body knows how much air it needs to take in. Just allow it to take in as much or as little as it needs to. Then with your mind, just let your attention rest gently on the breathing, being aware of the breath flowing in and then flowing out. Try to do that one breath after another, continuously. But also be aware of what your mind is doing, and when you notice your mind is gone away from the breath to something else, usually a thought or a sound. Be aware of that. Don't beat yourself up or be upset about it. But just gently take your mind away from that other object and bring it back to the breath. So these other objects, thoughts, memories, sounds, and so forth, are temporary, transitory. They're like clouds passing through the sky. So we don't have to pay attention to them. Now, at least, we can always look at them later if we need to. But just really try your best that for now, while we're here doing this meditation, you will not let your mind get caught up in or follow any other thought. And if it does, bring it back to the breath. So really try to keep your mind, your awareness right here in the present place, right now, in the present moment. Being aware of the breath coming in, going out. So again, whenever you notice your mind is not on the breath, watching the breath, but doing something else, so just gently let go of or disengage your mind from the other object. So thoughts and other experiences are not solid, permanent things. They're similar to clouds. They arise, they're there for a moment, they pass. So we don't have to pay attention to or get caught up in our thoughts. We can just notice them and then let them go, put them aside, and just keep coming back to the breath, back to the present moment. So once a man came to me and he said, "I can't meditate." He said, "Whenever I try to focus on my breath, it just keeps going away. I can't keep it there." So he seemed to have the idea that when you practice meditation, your mind should always stay on your object, like the breath, and never go away. And if it does go away, then there's something wrong. Like, that means you can't do it. So I think this is a misunderstanding, because, for one thing, I've mentioned this before, the normal state of our mind, I mean, let's say we do 10 minutes of meditation a day. Out of 24 hours, okay, 10 minutes of meditation. And the rest of the time, what are you doing? What is your mind doing? Is your mind staying focused on one thing? No. It's jumping all over the place, right? Many, even at the same time, multitasking, you know? You might be doing several things at the same time. And even when we sleep, that's a time when we're supposed to be resting. But even when we're sleeping, our mind can be very busy, right? Creating all these crazy dreams. So most of the time, our mind is not still, calm, quiet, focused on just one thing. And so then trying to sit for 10 minutes or even for 20 minutes or 30 minutes or longer, out of the rest of the time, compared to the rest of the time, that's a very, very short amount of time. The way that our mind works, what happens in our mind, is what we are most familiar with. You know, the habit patterns of our mind. So if most of the time, 23 and a half hours of the day, our mind is busy running here and there, doing many different things, that's what our mind is most familiar with or habituated to. That's our mental pattern, our mental habit is rushing, busy, many different things. So then in that one period of time when we're trying to meditate, whether it's 10 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever, it's only natural that the mind will want to continue that pattern. That's what it's used to. That's what it's familiar with, what it's habituated to. Busy, 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 thinking, right? So you can't expect that, you know, sitting down for 10 minutes, all of a sudden your mind's just going to stop, right, and stay focused. It's just not possible, at least for now. It is possible if you are willing and able to put in a lot of time practicing meditation. You know, there are full-time meditators, right? Example, monks or nuns in different Buddhist countries, and they go into the monastery or they go into the forest and they may meditate 10 hours a day or 12 hours a day or 15 hours a day, right? Really full-time meditating and not doing a lot of other things, maybe working, cooking, cleaning, reciting sutras, but not doing the things most people do, running around in cars and talking on the phone and so on. So they live a pretty calm, peaceful, contemplative life. So if you're in that kind of situation, you're spending a lot of time every day meditating, then it's possible to get to the point where your mind really calms down and you're able to stay focused on your object for longer and longer periods of time. And eventually you can get to the point where, you know, you're able to stay focused as long as you want with no other thoughts coming. But if you're living in the city, especially like Singapore, big, busy city, lots of things going on, lots of things to distract your attention, and your lifestyle is also very busy, running here and there in your car, on the bus, on the train, talking on the phone, working and so on and so forth, watching TV, doing the internet. So if this kind of lifestyle you know, you really can't expect that meditating 15 minutes a day or 20 minutes or even an hour a day, your mind is going to suddenly go completely calm and quiet. Okay? So I'm not saying that to discourage you. I'm just saying that, you know, realistically, if we really want to stop our mind and be able to develop concentration, we have to go into that kind of special situation for a long period of time and really work on the practice of meditation. So if you're not able to do that, at least for now, you do have to stay here and continue working and so on, it's still fine to meditate 10 minutes, 10 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever every day. But just don't expect that your mind is going to completely calm down. All those thoughts are going to go away, okay? But you can at least learn not to totally get carried away with your thoughts. You can learn to see thoughts as thoughts and say, no, not now, come back to the breath. And it's fine to keep doing that, even if you have to do that 50 times a minute. It's fine. And that is meditation. Don't think it's not meditation. Don't think meditation is only when there are no thoughts and you're totally focused on your object. Of course, that is meditation, but that's a very high level of meditation. So just the fact that you try to sit down, you try to sit still, you try to focus on your mind, even if it keeps running away and you keep having to bring it back, that is meditation. Okay? Because you are trying to develop your awareness of what your mind is doing, whether it's on the object or doing something else. So you are developing your awareness, and if you keep working at it slowly, over time, it does get better. So, if you have time, if you have the ability to go for retreats, there are retreats here in Singapore or nearby in Malaysia, Thailand, and so on. So if you have the time, the ability to do, you know, 1 week or 10 days or 1 month, whatever, you know, from time to time, that's really helpful to be able to go away from your home, your busy life, your phone, and, you know, just spend more time meditating. You'll probably notice in a retreat situation, in that kind of environment, that kind of lifestyle and schedule, that your mind does get calmer, not so busy, not so crazy. So then you can see what's possible, what is possible to do with your mind. Okay, so in this course, we've learned a few different kinds of meditation. So I explained it in our tradition, the Gelug tradition of Tibetan Buddhism. It said that there's two main kinds of meditation. One is called placement or concentration meditation. So that's like what we've been doing here, sitting down, closing the eyes, trying to sit still, and then trying to focus on one object. We've been using the breath, but you can use other objects. You can use loving kindness. You can use an image of the Buddha. There's different objects that could be used. But the breath is easy because it's always there. It's already there. So we don't have to visualize anything or recite anything or think of anything. We just focus on the breath as it's coming in and going out. So there's a whole explanation of how you can develop your ability to stay focused on the breath. It's called calm abiding or shamatha. Some of you may have had a chance to get teachings on that. For example, Alan Wallace comes here sometimes, I think, and explains that kind of meditation where you go through 9 different stages of concentration until after the 9th stage, actually, is when you achieve calm abiding. And that's the point at which you're able to stay focused or concentrated on your object for 4 hours or more without any distraction or sleepiness. It's So it's like very sharp and clear, focused concentration, and very blissful, physically and mentally blissful. So that's quite a high achievement. Some people are able to do that, but you know, even if we can't get all the way, even if we can just improve our concentration, get a little bit better, then that's already good. And even just, like I say, even just doing 10 minutes a day or more, if you can do more, that's better. But just to sit down quietly and try to focus on the breathing, it's good for you. It's good for your body, good for your health, also good for your mind, to give yourself a break, at least sometimes, from the craziness that the mind can get into. Okay? So it's up to each person how much they're able to do, how much time they're able to spend. You can also do more than one session a day. I mean, it's good to do at least one, but you can also do two or three. Even at work, you know, people will sometimes just take 5 minutes off and sit quietly at their desk or go sit in a park, some quiet place, and just for a few minutes, or even for 1 minute. Now, just sit quietly, relax, be aware of the breathing coming in and going out. So even that is helpful to be more relaxed, more peaceful, and get to know your mind better. And then the other main kind of meditation explained in our tradition is called analytical meditation. And we didn't spend a lot of time on that. We did a couple of sessions of that type of meditation. For example, loving kindness, we did one night, and then impermanence. Actually, to do this kind of meditation, it's best if you receive teachings on what we call the Lam Rim. Lam Rim is the stages of the path to enlightenment. So this consists of a number of different topics that are about what we need to know about and think about and meditate on for our mind to gradually transform so that we go from where we are now as an unenlightened being all the way up to enlightenment, being an enlightened being. So there's a series of topics that are to be listened to. Ideally, you first listen to teachings on these topics so you know what they're all about, what to think about. And then you, on your own, meditate on these topics. So that's the meaning of analytical meditation. So I'm sure some of you have had the chance to listen to teachings on the Lam Rim. If you haven't, and you're interested in pursuing that kind of practice, then try to find a place where you can learn about the Lam Rim. Actually, one possibility that many people do is to go to Kopan Monastery in Nepal. Every year in November, like right now it's going on, they have a 1 month course on the Lam Rim where a teacher will explain the Lam Rim subjects and then their guided meditations. So you can learn how to do those kind of meditations. I'm sure some of you have done that already. So to really do analytical meditation, to know how to do that kind of meditation, it's good to be in a situation like that. Also, I wanted to mention a book that it's a book by Thupten Chodron. She's going to be coming here next week and giving some talks and retreats and so on. So she put together this book. It's called Guided Meditations on the Stages of the Path. So it contains some basic instruction on meditation, and then on the main Lam Rim meditations of the path. And there's also a CD in the back. So it contains guided meditation, so you can, you know, put that on your CD player and listen to her guiding the meditation and meditate along with that. So this is actually in the ABC library. There's two copies of this. So that's that's a good option. There's also, in my book, How to Meditate, there are a number of analytical meditations. There's a whole section on analytical meditations explaining in general what they're about, and then instructions on just a sampling of analytical meditations. And actually this weekend we have a course on preparing for death and helping the dying, death and dying. And during that course, we'll do some guided analytical meditation. So if you're planning to attend that, you can get some more experience in that kind of meditation. So a course like this, which is only six lessons, isn't enough to learn everything there is to learn about meditation. It's just more like, you know, some basic instructions and ideas. But if you really want to pursue a practice of meditation, make meditation a part of your life, then it's good to, you know, continue with other classes and so on, either here or in other places. And also during this course, we looked at some of the hindrances that can arise during meditation. So it's important that we look out for those. We know what they are and we look out for them, so that if they happen to us, we'll be able to deal with them and not just get stuck in them. So I talked about sleepiness, for example. That's a common problem, especially if you're working too hard. So one way to deal with sleepiness is to just make sure you do get enough sleep at night. You know, if you're staying up until 2 o'clock in the morning and then getting up at 6 o'clock, then you're probably not getting enough sleep. And then when you sit down and meditate, if you're nodding off, falling asleep, it's probably, you just need to sleep more. So make sure you're getting enough sleep at night. But even if you do get 8 hours or 10 hours of sleep at night, it's still possible that you can become sleepy during meditation. So one thing that's helpful is try not to meditate right after eating a big meal. That's for sure going to knock you to sleep, because you know all the energy in the body is going into digesting the food. It's better to, you know, do some exercise first, go for a walk first, and leave at least an hour after eating before you try to meditate. And make sure you sit up straight, because if your body is slouched like that, then that's conducive to sleep. So sitting up straight and keeping your eyes open rather than closed. So those are things that can help to prevent sleepiness. And I also mentioned light, imagining light. If your mind is dull, dark, heavy, sleepy, it's good to visualize light. We're going to do a little bit of visualization at the end of the session tonight, so you can get some taste of that kind of practice. It's used a lot in the Tibetan tradition. And then the other big problem is distraction, the mind just wandering away to something else. So there's no magic cure for that, except to notice when that happens and be very disciplined and say, no, that's not what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm not supposed to be thinking about, you know, what I'm going to do tomorrow or what I did yesterday. I'm supposed to be in the present, the here and now. But it really does take a lot of time to learn, or to rather unlearn, that habit of the mind wandering and thinking, going all over the place. So we just have to be very patient with ourselves and just keep coming back to our object again and again. And then I wanted to talk about a few other related practices to meditation that help us in our meditation practice. And one of these is ethics. So in Buddhism, there's a common threefold, set of practices for following the path. There are ethics, concentration and wisdom, or sila, samadhi, and prajna in the Sanskrit terms. So meditation falls into the second of these, concentration. So meditation is to train our mind to stay focused, concentrated. And then on the basis of that, we can develop wisdom, which is the main thing that enables us to be free of suffering, understanding the true nature of things. But the basis of both concentration and wisdom is ethics. And in Buddhism, ethics could be summarized into non-harmfulness. Living our life in the way that we try not to harm anybody, ourselves or others. When we do things that are harmful, of course, you know, others suffer as a result of that, but we suffer too. That may not always be obvious, but we hurt ourselves when we hurt others. We are damaging our own true nature. We are causing disturbance to our own energy and our mind and so forth. So, and on top of that, Buddhism says if we do something harmful, then an imprint is left on our mind, something kind of invisible, we can't see it. But later on, if we don't do anything to purify that, later in the future, we will experience some adverse circumstances, some problem, suffering as a result of that. So this is karma, cause and effect. So there's suffering both now in the present and also later on in the future. But it's also an obstacle to meditation, because when we get caught up in negative attitudes and then do negative behavior that's harmful to others, harmful to the world and so on, it's disturbing our energy. And then when we try to sit down and meditate, it's going to be even harder than usual. I mean, you may have had that experience, you know. If you have a fight with somebody, let's say, you have an argument and you're speaking these angry, hurtful words to someone, right? And then after that, you sit down and try to meditate. Will you be able to meditate? No. No, because you're reliving, you're replaying that argument, you know, and probably feeling the anger that you felt, and maybe even thinking, okay, next time I meet that person, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to do that, and so on. So you're planning your next, you know, attack. So that's not meditation, right? Meditation ideally should be having a calm state of mind, a peaceful state of mind, a positive state of mind, focused on our object and so on. So I think it's easy to see that if we don't live ethically, if we don't behave ethically, but let ourselves get caught up in harmful attitudes and harmful behavior, that's a hindrance to meditation. And if we want to be serious about meditation and have success in meditation, it's very important to live an ethical lifestyle, which basically means trying to refrain from harmful actions. So there's a few different formulas for how to do this, such as the five precepts in Buddhism, which are recommended for lay people to follow to avoid killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, which mainly means adultery, rape, and so forth, and lying, telling lies, and taking intoxicants, which can also include recreational drugs, things that cause your mind to be out of control. So trying to refrain from those as much as you can. If you can't give them up totally, you know, at least try to cut down as much as possible. And there's other harmful actions as well that may not fit into those, such as harsh speech. So there's another list of 10 non-virtues that the Buddha said we should try to avoid. I'm not going to go into all of those now, but that's explained in the Lamrim. But just in general, any kind of action of the body or of the speech or even of our mind, our thoughts, that's negative, that's motivated by anger or hatred or greed or jealousy, and that is harmful, we should try our best to refrain from that. So this is something that takes time. We can't immediately stop all harmful actions from day one, but gradually over time, trying to be less harmful and more helpful in our life. So that's a very important basis upon which we can then practice meditation and be successful in meditation. And then another point is refuge. So this is what we do as Buddhists, those of us who have learned something about the Buddha, his teachings, the path that we follow, and feel, oh, this is really good, and I want to follow this path, I want to follow the Buddha, take the Buddha as my teacher and guide, and so on. Then we have what we call taking refuge. So probably many of you have already done that, but it's not something to rush into, it's something, you know, to really think about carefully before you decide to take that step. But that's also very helpful. When I was living in Singapore back in the 90s and I was teaching meditation, sometimes somebody would ask me a question that I never heard before, and I was surprised, but I kind of got used to it. So people would ask me, if I practice meditation, will I be possessed by spirits? And I was like, what? Where did that come from? But apparently there are cases of that happening, you know, that when people practice meditation. I don't know if it's really true or not, but strange things can happen, and it could be because of spirits. So it's said that the Buddha is more powerful than any spirits. So if we take refuge in the Buddha and feel that when we're meditating, the Buddha is around, is present, which is true according to Buddhism. Buddha's always around. He's not so, like, far away, but he's always with us all the time. But we may not think of the Buddha and call on the Buddha for help. And that's what we do when we take refuge. Okay, so normally in a Buddhist context, before practicing meditation, we haven't really been doing that here, but it's something you can do. Before we start meditating, we think of the Buddha and take refuge, which basically means, you know, I put myself under your compassionate care and guidance. Please be with me while I'm meditating. So if you do that, and if you do feel the Buddha's presence there with you when you're meditating, I think that should keep away any, you know, naughty spirits or... It also just gives you inspiration, you know. This is what the Buddha did. The Buddha practiced meditation, and he purified his mind and transformed his mind and made it just totally pure and positive. So I want to try to do that too. Okay, so it's kind of like taking the Buddha as a role model, as an example, as a guide to follow. So I'm just saying that in case anyone does have that worry or concern about, you know, being bothered by spirits. So this is a remedy, a preventive factor for that. Also, and then, yeah, one other thing. One time when I was living in England, there's a Lama, Geshe Wangchen, who had been living in London for quite a while and teaching there. And I once heard him give advice about a daily practice of meditation. And I think it's very practical, very helpful, so I'd like to pass that on. Because in London, like here, you know, people are very, very busy and they don't have that much time to meditate. So he said, if you have a session of meditation every day, let's say half an hour. That may be a lot for some people, but just imagine you have a half an hour. So he said, spend the first half, like the first 15 minutes, doing meditation on the breath, trying to stay with the breath like we've been doing here. And then while doing that, you might notice there's something in your mind that's not quite right. You might be feeling sad, or you might be feeling angry, or you might be feeling anxious, or whatever, you know, something that's kind of disturbing your mind. And he said you can spend the second half of the session doing a meditation related to that, like trying to apply some antidote or clear up that problem. Okay, so of course you would need to know what are the antidotes to the different problems, but that's what you find in the Lam Rim. And then he said, but if there's no problem, nothing disturbing your mind, then you can spend the second half of the session doing whatever you want. You can continue doing meditation on the breath, or you can do something else. Like you might want to do Tara practice or loving kindness meditation or whatever. It's up to you. So I really liked that advice. I thought it's very practical because you're using your meditation session to deal with things that are going on in your life, rather than trying to push those aside and run away from those, not deal with those, hope they'll go away by themselves, but they probably won't. So instead, meditation should help us in our life. It should help us to work on our problems and, solve our problems and become more positive. So if there are problems, they'll come up in your meditation, right? They'll be there. You can't run away from them. So then, you're using part of your meditation session to start working on those problems. Does that make sense? Is that clear? So this is just a suggestion. It's not something you have to do, but I just thought it's very useful, very practical. As, because people often ask, okay, there's so many kinds of meditations, so what should I do? Well, I think that's a very good way of going about a daily practice. Any questions? Yeah.
Good evening, Venerable. Can I check with you? I understand that there is also walking meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So when we are doing walking meditation, may I know what is better? Is it concentration or the analytical? Then also for beginner, is it good to start with walking meditation?
Well, that kind of meditation isn't really found in the Tibetan tradition, at least in my experience. It's more found in other traditions, like in the Theravada tradition. For example, if you go to a Theravada center, retreat center, or monastery, then they have alternate sessions of sitting meditation and walking meditation. So usually it's a way to continue developing awareness, mindfulness, what's happening moment by moment by moment. Because it's hard to sit so many hours, most people. to have sessions of sitting and then walking and sitting and walking. So that's one reason for doing the walking meditation, is just to learn. It's just to have another way of developing or cultivating mindfulness. And also the Buddha did talk about in the Satipatthana Sutra, he did say, it's important to maintain your mindfulness whatever you're doing, whether you're sitting or walking or lying down or standing, in all postures, in all actions, we should try to cultivate mindfulness. So I think that's why it's practiced. It's also practiced in the Zen tradition, I think in some Zen monasteries. So, yeah, the way I've learned it is when you practice walking meditation, you focus on your feet, movement of your feet, the sensations in your feet as you're touching the floor or ground. So usually it's like that, rather than on the breathing, but on your feet moving. So I know, like many Westerners, have trouble sitting cross-legged. You know, we tend to sit on chairs more than cross-legged on the floor. So when people come to a meditation center and they have to sit cross-legged, they often have a lot of pain, difficulty. So it's quite nice to be able to do meditation in another posture other than sitting. You know, to be able to stand up, stretch your legs, move your body, but still develop your ability to be concentrated and mindful. So I thought to end tonight to do a little bit of visualization meditation. So this is found in the Tibetan tradition, particularly, specifically the Vajrayana tradition. There's a lot of practices where we visualize Buddhas, you know, all these different wonderful Buddha images. It's a practice to help us get in touch with our own Buddha nature, our own potential for enlightenment. So when we visualize a Buddha image, then we are visualizing like what we will become in the future. One day we will become a Buddha and we will have all the wonderful qualities that a Buddha has. So it kind of inspires us, but also helps us to start moving more in that direction and cultivating those qualities in ourself. But it's also good to use, like I say, at the beginning of a meditation, before you start doing other meditations, to think of the Buddha and then take refuge and feel that the Buddha is there with you, present while you're meditating. So this can give you some inspiration and also protection in case you're worried about ghosts or spirits or whatever coming to bother you. So anyway, I thought we could end by doing a little bit of that kind of practice, visualizing the Buddha. And also we have mantras. So all the different Buddha figures have a mantra associated with them. So some of you might know the mantra of the Buddha, and if you don't, you can just listen to it while we recite it. So, again, make yourselves comfortable with your back straight, but your shoulders relaxed. Keep your eyes open a little bit if you wish, or closed, whichever is more comfortable for you. And once again, try to let your mind, your awareness, be in the present, the here and now, rather than thinking about the past or thinking about the future or any other thing. To put aside all other thoughts and just keep your mind focused on this meditation. So when we do visualization, we're using our mind's ability to think in pictures. Our mind does that anyway, naturally. For example, we can easily think of and get a mental picture of our home, your kitchen, your bedroom, your living room, the place where you live. So we can call such a mental picture to mind. But here we're trying to bring to mind or visualize an image of the Buddha. So I'll describe it and just use your mind to try to draw or create this image to the best of your ability. But don't worry if you can't have a perfect and completely clear, fully detailed image. Just be content with whatever you're able to manage. So imagine that in a space in front of you and at the level of your forehead, but 1 or 2 meters away, is the Buddha. And he's not like a statue made of metal or wood, nor a painting on canvas, but like a real being made of light, transparent, three-dimensional, pure, bright, radiant, and very beautiful and inspiring. So the Buddha is sitting with his legs in the full lotus position, and he's wearing the saffron-colored robes of a monk. And his body is made of golden light. So it's not a body like ours with skin and blood and bones and organs, but just pure light. Pure, transparent, and radiant golden light. And if you can, imagine that he's sitting on a lotus. The petals of the lotus opened up and spread out flat. And on top of the lotus, there's 2 flat disks of light representing the sun and the moon. So that forms the seat for the Buddha, what he's sitting on. And then the Buddha's right hand is resting on his right knee in what's called the earth-touching position. The palm is against his knee and the fingers are pointing downwards and touching the seat beneath him. And his left hand is resting in his lap with the palm facing upwards. This is the meditation position. And that hand holds a bowl, an alms bowl, like the monks use to collect alms for their daily meal. And this bowl is filled with nectar, medicinal healing nectar, that cures our suffering and our delusions. And the Buddha's face is smiling, peaceful. The expression on his face is of complete, pure, unconditional love and compassion for you and everyone else, for all living beings. So in the Buddha's mind, there's not the slightest trace of any negative thoughts or attitudes like anger or hatred or resentment. So Buddha has nothing but love, kindness, compassion, forgiveness. So even for our faults and our mistakes, the things we've done wrong, Buddha doesn't hold that against us. He doesn't hold a grudge or feel angry at us. He's completely forgiving and caring and always there to help us and guide us. And on the top of the Buddha's head is what's called the Ushnisha, the crown protrusion, which is a symbol of his enlightenment, his amazing attainments. So that's a general idea of how to visualize the Buddha. And again, don't worry if you're not able to have a perfectly clear and fully detailed visualization. And don't worry if you can't see anything at all, if it's just blank, empty space. Try to at least feel that the Buddha is there in front of you, radiating his love, kindness, compassion, and positive energy. So just spend a few minutes meditating on that. Visualizing the Buddha if you can, and even if you can't, feeling that he is there with all those wonderful qualities, all his wisdom, kindness, compassion, and his wish to help you and everyone else, all living beings. So now, those who know the mantra of the Buddha can recite it together with me a few times. While reciting the mantra, imagine light flowing from the Buddha into you, like a rays of light flowing into you and filling you up completely, filling every cell, atom, tiny particle of your body, and every part of your mind, and purifying whatever is there that's negative and problematic, painful, suffering, all that gets purified, cleared away. And you get filled up with positive energy, helping you to become more like the Buddha, to develop the same kind of qualities that the Buddha has in his mind. So you can imagine this light coming into yourself, and if you can, imagine it going into everyone else as well. Everyone else in the room, and every other person and being in the world.
Tayata Om Muni Muni Maha Munaye Soha. Tayata Om Muni Muni Maha Munaye Soha. Tayata
And then imagine that the image of the Buddha in front of you melts into light, becomes just pure light, and then that dissolves into you, filling you completely. Just let your mind rest for a few moments in that experience of being completely filled with all the positive energy and positive qualities of the Buddha, helping you, blessing you to be able to continue in your spiritual path towards becoming like the Buddha yourself. Okay, so to end our session tonight, let's take a few moments to make a mental dedication of the positive energy that we've created by making the effort to come here and then participate, listen, meditate, and do all of this with a positive aspiration, a positive motivation, wanting to benefit not only ourselves but others as well. So we've definitely created some good energy here tonight, what we call merit. Merit is the cause of happiness, It's like good karma, it brings happiness in the future. And it's also a cause of spiritual growth or progress on the path. So let's share this merit with others, wishing that it will bring happiness, well-being, freedom from suffering and the causes of suffering to all other beings throughout the world, throughout the universe. And may it help all of us get closer to enlightenment. Okay, so thank you for coming, and I hope it's been helpful. Hope you've learned something. And I hope you continue to practice. And just one announcement, I don't know if it was mentioned before, but this weekend we have a course on death and dying, and originally it was meant to go 10 to 5 both days, but now it's going to be 10 to 4 on Saturday, and then just 10 to 12 on Sunday, because we have some other activities in the evening, so it's turning into a really long day. So it'll just be 10 to 12 on Sunday. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for all your teachings.
Thank you very much.
I hope you enjoy your stay in Singapore.
Yeah, it's been lots of fun.
Thank you, Venerable. So for those who may not know, we have got this book called Essential Nectar, which is actually a book on Lambrind. It's a free publication. You can pick it up for if you want to use your meditation. And also this coming Sunday, 7 p.m. we have a dinner for together with Vemra Sangekadro, his last day with us. So if you'd like to sign up, you can sign up at the office on the 4th level. Okay. Thank you. There's also a Lama Tsongkhapa Guru Yoga Puja at 4:30. Ends at 6:30. Thank you.